unfortunately, human rights, as they're applied today, as they're implemented today, they are not universal or indivisible.
Welcome to Voices of Dignity, a UN Human Rights podcast series. I'm Kayloy Henry from UN Human Rights. In the coming weeks, we bring you in-depth conversations with thought leaders and experts looking at human rights issues and the future of human rights. In this episode, we explore culture as a chance to participate and how digital technology is not always positive for schools with Farida Shaheed. Stay tuned. Human rights are often seen as universal and indivisible in word, yet can be at odds in deed. Farida Shaheed knows about this, having worked as an expert on both cultural rights and now education as the Special Rapporteur on the right to education. Farida is the executive director of Pakistan's leading gender justice organization, Shirkat Gah Women's Resource Center, and has been an independent expert and consultant for numerous UN agencies. She sat down to discuss how culture is not fixed and that people deserve the chance to participate in their culture and what the future of education might look like.
To me, the question is how committed everybody is to ensuring that the dignity and worth of every human being is considered equal and to ensuring equal human rights for everybody. I think there's been quite a lot of moving back from the principles and what the youth said. Many of them are still studying, so they are quite young. But they said, everyone does not seem to be treated the same. Not everyone has access, including education, but also other opportunities. They see injustices and don't see sufficient actions being taken for this. So I really applaud their vision for a peaceful world, which is free of violence, where everyone's dignity is upheld, and one where it is sustainable. And I think the younger generations are much more conscious of the need to preserve, to nurture nature and the environment, because without the planet, we have nowhere to live. Unfortunately, human rights, as they're applied today, as they're implemented today, they are not universal or indivisible. They should be. And that's where the commitment and my question is whether we're really committed. And by that, I mean all the states, but all actors, which includes, very importantly, the private sector, have to be brought on board.
Yeah. Let's go and just to go on the notion of cultural rights. We've got a question here about, you know, how important is it to incorporate cultural and linguistic rights within a framework of education as universal rights? And are there best practices for this?
Let me tell you what I think about I don't think cultural rights is not about preserving culture at any given point of time, frozen or otherwise, or restorations of cultural artifacts. Yes, it's cultural heritage. You need to have access to that. But cultural rights are about ensuring that everyone, without discrimination, has the right to take part in, to contribute to, and be part of cultural life in all its aspects. So it's really about preserving, protecting, respecting the right of everyone to continuously create communities of shared values and worldviews and meanings. It's about giving them the wherewithal in order to be able to actually do that. We all belong to multiple communities, and all communities and all cultures do not, practices within cultures and communities don't always align with human rights. And that, so all things should not be preserved. If you take women, for instance, which is, of course, what I do in my regular life, women have never been treated equally in any culture, but women must be accepted as and supported to be invested with the authority to be equal spokespersons for their communities. So must the youth. So must people with disabilities, the migrants. That there's so many bases on which we exclude, as you said, linguistic basis. ethnic basis. Race is another, sexual orientation and gender identity. There's millions of different ways in which we so to distinguish is one thing, to discriminate is another. And everyone must have an equal voice. And I must have the right to participate in as many or as few communities as I want, and to invent them and to leave them mm-hmm. without fear of reprisal.
It's really interesting, the notion that cultural rights isn't about, you know, preserving everything in a culture, but it's about the ability to be able to participate fully in a culture, or not participate as you would.
So let me ask you a question. How often have you heard people say, oh, that's against our culture. Culture won't allow this.
Yes, I've heard that a lot.
My question is, and I keep saying this, culture does not exist outside human beings. So don't tell me this thing called culture comes and tells us what to do. Too often, culture is used to maintain power differentials within communities, which is not helpful. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So when we think of cultures, don't think of it as a static thing. Mm-hmm. It's a continuous dynamic process, and cultural rights preserves that dynamic process.
Yeah. Let's look loop back a bit to education. I want to talk a little bit about technology and the role of technology. What role does it play in expanding access to education, and how can it be harnessed to overcome disparities in educational opportunities? Or has that ship sailed?
When I look and think about technologies, there's so many different diverse kinds of technologies that I'm trying to think of. But people normally, these days, we are focusing a lot on digital technologies. So, of course, the technologies that we have, for instance, helped people with computers access information. All of those are very positive. But my understanding and all that I've read so far of digital technology is troubling. So let's use digital technology. And you had companies that did provide what they said was free education, right? Freely give devices mm-hmm. And technology and apps. What actually happened in practice is that those companies were invading the privacy of the children, their parents, their friends in class and out of class. The technology is using children's privacy and data to pay for it. And that's completely not acceptable. Mm-hmm. I think also the apps or the programs that were made were not shared with the schools, were not made with the schools. Therefore, they did not benefit the teachers or the schools. And I think that's something that needs to be thought of. Another huge problem is that the more and more we depend on AI and algorithms are biased. So when algorithms are biased, they're not going to reflect the reality of those who are marginalized. And from a human rights perspective, we always look for the most marginalized. Why is that important? If you allow standardized testing, which is developed by algorithms and AI and digital technology, to be the standard, you have a simple question like, what is the maximum number of people who can ride a motorcycle? Mm-hmm. Likely answer, 2. In my country, completely against reality, it'll be 5 or 6. So you are then asking that child to decide whether they believe the reality they live in, or whether they're going to make an answer because they know that answer is going to get them a tick mark. And that's very difficult. I mean, it sounds simple, but you're really, all of this is asking you to decide where you're going to put your faith and your trust in your reality that you live every day, or somebody's idea of the reality that exists. The third point, just to end on digital technology, is talking to having the Child Right Committee had a discussion on children's right in the digital age. And one of the psychologists was extremely concerned about children aged 0 to 5 losing the capacity and ability to socialize, to interact, to mediate human relations. I think that would be a serious problem if we start losing that competency. So you need to be physically together to understand how to negotiate, how to understand if you have different opinions, how to mediate. You don't take out a physical thing and take it out physically, but you need to be in touch with someone to be able to do that.
Last question. We've been trying to get people to reimagine human rights in the next 25 years, so UDHR 100. Cast your eye to your crystal ball. And what would you like to see, or where do you see the right to education?
I don't know what it looks like yet, but I think the direction in which we need to go is for us to restructure education. And the Gen Z panelists who came to the 25th Education Mandate event last Friday, some of them questioned, do we need classrooms? What is it? What is the shape? So that's the structure in terms of organization. I would want it to be open. I would want there to be much more appreciation of our artistic expressions. Why do we give 100 points for math and zero for art? I think, you know, that's creativeness. Why do we not give it the same importance? I don't think education should be driven by marketing, which is, you know, you need these skills so you get this technology so you get a job. Education has to be rounded. It has to be based on human rights, and it needs to explore and enable everyone to reach the full potential as human beings, whatever that may be. Secondly, is how teaching is done needs to change. So there's the structure, the content, how it's delivered, the pedagogy needs to change, how things are assessed needs to change too. One thing human rights will have to do, which is not education specific, but maybe we can think of it through education, is the need, two things. One, the need for business to also understand and to own human rights concepts. But also, we will need to rethink perhaps what the UDHR means in terms now of this digital world and information economy, which did not exist at all then, because they're saying we have not transformed that. How do you transform that to meaningful principles and regulations today and tomorrow?
Well, we've come to the end of this episode of Voices of Dignity, looking at voices of change with Farida Shaheed. I would like to thank her for this enlightening and wide-ranging discussion. If you want to learn more about this, then please go to our website, www.ohchr.org. Next time, we look at how to defend those who defend human rights with Hassan Shear from the Pan-African Human Rights Defenders Network. I'm Kayloy Henry. Thanks for listening.